He's advised Federal Reserve chairs, shaped billion-dollar institutions, and now he's leading a movement to build Latino wealth across America. Orson Aguilar, longtime equity warrior and Time Mania ally, joins me to talk leadership, legacy, and why Latino prosperity isn't a nonprofit. It's a national mission. You don't want to miss this one. Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I am Ty Bledsoe, the CEO of Undisputed LLC and the host. Today's guest is Orson Aguilar, leader, savant. Let's just read this bio. Just check this out. Orson Aguilar, a nationally recognized leader in economic justice and wealth building for communities of color. Raised in the neighborhood of Boyle Heights in Los Angeles, Orson is the president and CEO of Latino Prosperity and is the former president of the Greenlining Institute. He has received numerous leadership appointments, including serving on the Federal Reserve of San Francisco's Community Advisory Council, Bank of America's National Community Advisory Council, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company's Community Advisory Board, and PG&E's Community Advisory Council. In 2019, Congresswoman Barbara Lee recognized him with a Congressional Record Award, and Oakland's mayor proclaimed April 26, 2019, as Orson Aguilar Day. Orson has been featured, has testified before the United States Congress, and has been quoted in various news outlets, including the Los Angeles Times, CNBC News, Univision, Telemundo, The Wall Street Journal, and USA Today. Orson, welcome to the Undisputed Podcast with Ty Bledsoe.
Ty, it's great to be here with you. Thank you for inviting me, and just looking forward to our conversations. But honored that here you have me on your show, and congratulations to you.
Thank you so much. Now, looking at Orson, we go back a long ways, right? Look at I can't call you the baby face executive, right? But you don't age. You know this. You don't age. For those of you on Spotify and Apple who you only hear our voice and such forth, you can't see. But Orson has not aged in the last 20 years. Trust me, he has not aged. He's living a clean life and such forth. Thank you for being with us today. Orson, let's go here. How did growing up in Boyle Heights, Los Angeles, shape your perspective?
Yeah, thanks. Great question, because that's Boyle Heights means a lot to me. Boyle Heights, for those that don't know, is the easternmost neighborhood of Los Angeles, just east of the LA River. Sometimes people also refer to it as East Los Angeles because it's east of downtown. Just think about it as a very well-known Mexican-American, Latino community, a lot of history of civil rights, has been an important hub for the Latino community here in California, especially in Southern California. And just growing up in that neighborhood was amazing, right? I grew up in an apartment with 10,000 people. And so just a very vibrant Latino neighborhood with entrepreneurs, with folks just really working hard, and a lot of folks just recently immigrated to the U.S. who just wanted to make their American dream, and that was the start.
Orson, you've had an exceptional career, right? In the private sector, particularly in the nonprofit sector. What factors have contributed to your success?
Yeah, I've been lucky. I've been in the nonprofit sector most of my life. I was private sector, as you mentioned, 3.5 years, but the 20 years plus I've been in the nonprofit sector. And, it kind of ties into the next question about mentors, but really it's one, working hard, right? I remember whatever job I took, I always try to be there before everybody and would sometimes leave, after everybody had gone. And not that I was doing it on purpose, I just love the work. And two, I've had people invest in me, right? Since I was a child in Boyle Heights, people in college that I met, professors that really took me under their wing. So it's a combination of people investing in kids like me, along with just meeting great, great mentors, professors, people in my professional career who, for whatever reason, took time, even though they weren't getting paid, volunteering, to just, show me the way. And that's made all the difference.
So let's think about this real quick. So you spent 20 plus years in a nonprofit realm. What advice would you have for someone who is perhaps in undergrad, grad school, early career, that's looking either to to grow into the nonprofit space or really enter the nonprofit space? What is the tips for success?
Yeah, what I would say to young people who are thinking about their careers, whether it's the nonprofit or public sector, is one, for success, you always have to work hard, right? There's no substitute for that. But two is finding an organization where you really believe in the mission, because that's what's going to drive you to work hard. And then three, finding people that are going to invest in you. I was lucky that I always found professionals, leaders that invested in me. And so I would say those are the three elements of success. Work hard, find something that's mission aligned, and find people that are willing to invest in you.
Who is John Gamboa, and what has he meant to you in your career?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I've been lucky to have different mentors, whether they be professors or people in my professional career. John Gamboa was one of the founders of the Green Lighting Institute. He founded it with another great gentleman, Bob Ganeza. Both of them were kind of geniuses in their own right. But John Gamboa is like a father figure to me. He not only was my first boss at Green Lighting, when he retired, I took over his position. But he went out of his way to help me with many other things. He helped me buy my first home, right, which has been really instrumental in my wealth journey. So he's the founder of Green Lighting. Still in touch with him today. He's still doing advocacy. He's probably, 82 years old. And talk about someone who doesn't age and slow down. John is still going strong and still really cares about fighting for social justice. I've been lucky to have teamed up with John in my lifetime.
Orson, what is your most profound memory in serving as president of the Green Lighting Institute?
That's a good question. There were many profound memories, but I would say we had the housing crash of 2008. And shortly after that, Barack Obama is elected. And we start going to Washington, D.C., taking our coalition. And we have powerful meetings with Treasury Secretary Geithner, bringing to him stories of foreclosure and making recommendations on what they can do to keep people in their homes. Meeting with Chairman Bernanke, who is new in his job, is trying to figure it out, but is really listening. And so I think that was a very pivotal moment, not just in my career, but in this nation's history, pivotal in the wealth creation and the impact it had, especially on first-time homebuyers, people of color. So I would say that definitely is one of the strongest memories I have.
Wow. And thinking about this, Orson, your time at Green Lighting is just profound. Green Lighting has invested, as an understatement, hundreds of millions of dollars of community reinvestment dollars that poured into underrepresented organizations, women-owned businesses, brown, black, Asian Pacific Islander, veteran, PWD, disabled-led nonprofits and small businesses. Talk about what tips did you learn in leading Green Lighting that's really facilitated your career and what you're doing now?
The biggest tip is professionalism. You know, one of the things, you know, even though we were activists at Green Lighting, right, we would show up to Washington, D.C. We were punctual. We were dressed the way they dress in Washington, D.C. We had our facts and figures. We were prepared in terms of who was going to say what. So always be professional, and no matter what the setting is, I think is really important. Two is have a good network, right? You're not going to go far alone, as they say. And so surround yourself with good people, figure out how to work well with them, and together you're going to be able to do a lot more than you can by yourself.
Which Federal Reserve chairman has done more to build economic wealth among underrepresented communities? Greenspan, Bernanke, Yellen, all of which you've worked with.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting that we have Chairman Powell, who I haven't met with. But I would say, I'll tell you who's done the most to destroy wealth, to answer that question. And that would be Chairman Alan Greenspan. Up into the housing crisis, John Gamboa, myself and others would go and educate him about all the mortgages we would see in the market, some of them which we couldn't understand how they worked. And Chairman Greenspan said, that's the beauty of the market. The fact that we have 40 mortgage products, That means the market is finally doing what it should be doing. And then fast forward, we have the crash. Alan Greenspan admits that he underestimated corporate greed, that corporations would actually do something just for their own benefit, even if it was to the detriment of society. And then he kind of took a swipe and said, well, we should also blame it on our investments in affordable housing. But that was never his concern when we met with him. So I would say he's done more to destroy. I'd say the others have been doing a lot to uplift. Chairwoman Yellen was amazing. Chairman Bernanke really listened. So I'll leave it there.
What inspired you to create and found Latino Prosperity?
Yeah, so you asked what inspired me to start Latino Prosperity. And I jokingly said it's my midlife crisis, right? Instead of turn 50, instead of buying a Porsche or doing something silly, I left a good paying job in the corporate sector to, you know, really do what I want to do for the rest of my life, which is fight on behalf of my community, fight for economic justice. So many people gave to me, right? The reason I'm here again is because people invested in me. I want to continue to pay that back. And, you know, the two things I know most are issues, economic development, economic justice. And of course, you know, I grew up in a heavily Latino community. I know the community well, so I can really be a better advocate by focusing on a narrower community, but keeping in mind all the great work I did around coalition building. And so, yeah, we're in startup mode. Right now, it's me and a good army of consultants, but we got some good funding and just excited that it'll turn out for the best. If not, you know, next time you come to LA, Ty, I might be your Uber driver. Nothing wrong with that, but.
So Orson, which industries are critical to improve Latino wealth in the United States and in Latin America?
Which industries are vital? I would say all industries are vital for creating Latino wealth, right? We are, you know, the great thing about Latinos, you know, there are 60 million Latinos in this country. Here in California, 40% of the population is Latino. So I would say every industry is going to be vital, right? Tech, the emergence of AI, of course, construction. Latinos heavily support the construction industry and other industries. So I would say it's all of them. But, you know, probably the biggest industries would probably be the academic industry, if we were to call them an industry, right? Colleges, universities. We're seeing record numbers of Latinos going to college, still not the level that we should be. Nevertheless, we're there. So it's vital that these universities truly invest in the emergence of young people, young Latinos, so that they can succeed in every industry that's out there, whether it be telecom, energy. You know, I think there's a lot of room for improvement in all the industries. And so, you know, I think the important thing is that we have those opportunities.
How will Latino Prosperity hold public assets and OpenAI accountable?
Yeah, so what's interesting, we're looking at OpenAI here in California. OpenAI, just quick background, was founded as a nonprofit organization that was going to do good. It was going to open source, and it was going to invest in profits into not just research on how AI impacts the economy, but also just looking at whether there are workers displaced, what can the organization do? So they set up with a multi-billion dollar fund to do good. Now they have said, forget that. We are going to become a for-profit because we realize we need to make money here. We're leaving a lot of money on the table. And we're saying that's fine, but those charitable assets, that original mission and those charitable assets have to be left behind for their original purpose. And so we are working to pressure our attorney general to ensure that those charitable assets are protected. You know, those charitable assets were predicted to be as valuable as $150 billion at one point. We're not sure what this is, but we just want to make sure that we respect charitable laws, right? We don't want companies creating nonprofits, taking the tax advantage and then running and making it a for-profit. It would make a terrible precedent. And so I'm co-leading a coalition along with the San Francisco Foundation, many others, just to make sure that our attorney general here does the right thing and protects those charitable assets of OpenAI.
How big of an opportunity area is that for advocacy organizations similar to Latino Prosperity across the United States and even international to make sure that those assets are really going to go benefit the broader public outside of the private sector?
Yeah, again, we're talking, you know, we could have a multi-billion dollar nonprofit, perhaps one of the best resources nonprofit ever. It could be a foundation. And it could go to a variety of things, right, that are about artificial intelligence. It could go to train the next generation of folks who are going to work in AI. It could help displaced workers. It could support, there are a lot of concerns AI has with privacy, AI and fraud. So how can we use it for fraud prevention instead of to enable fraudsters? So just think of all the impacts that AI could have. Some good, right? But there will always be some negative. And how can this fund, this charitable trust, help mediate some of these negative things that we might see from AI?
10 years from now, what will Latino Prosperity have achieved?
That's a good question. I think about impact all the time, right? And I want to, when I look at impact, I'm like, did we put out a blueprint that is then adopted by a local government, a state government, a national government, right? And this could be a blueprint around economic opportunity, focused on underserved communities, not just Latinos. And so, you know, you look at some of the blueprints that are being adopted today, we at the federal government, we wouldn't agree with those, most of those, but you know, that's a nonprofit organization that put together a blueprint and now is having mass impact on people and having, you know, impacting daily lives, I think for the worse. So how do we put forward together recommendations, blueprints that actually enable opportunity,
especially for those folks that haven't had opportunity? So that's the impact that I want to have.
And actually, for the clarification, for context, could you just share with the audience, Orson, that blueprint you're referring to that the United States government, that the current administration is unfolding before our eyes?
Yeah, so our President Trump has adopted the Heritage Foundation's blueprint called 2025. And that blueprint says we're going to get rid of all diversity, equity programs. We're going to get rid of the Department of Education. We're going to do all these things that, you know, that the conservatives have wanted to do for many years, but it's just much bolder. And now the architects of that blueprint are working in the administration and doing exactly as they said in the blueprint. So that's a nonprofit impact. And, you know, those are, you know, I'm not sure I'll ever have the resources that a Heritage has. You know, they probably had a $50 million to produce that blueprint and get it out there. But, you know, we don't need that much. You know, when you're on the side of social justice and fairness and equity, I think, you know, kind of goodwill is your leverage to do good.
Orson, what is more likely to occur first? A Latino governor of California, a Latino governor of Texas, or a Latino president or vice president of the United States of America?
That's a good question. You know, I don't really, you know, I'd love to see a Latino or Latina governor at, you know, at one of these states as president. I think it's important, but it's also important what they're going to advocate for, right? Who are they beholden to, right? Are they going to be beholden to a special interest, or are they really going to care about governing for the people? So at this point, you know, I'd love to see a Latina or a Latino, but I want to also make sure that they are pushing an agenda that is about equity, about investing in people, about just doing what's right, social justice. So I would say that we care, but it goes hand in hand with, you know, what the agenda is.
What does the future look like for your grandchildren?
I have three children. They're little, you know, 12, 13, and 15 right now. Hopefully they have kids. But, you know, I think the future is bright, right? I think that you see so many opportunities, you know, you see so many, I think you see younger people have different opportunities than than we had, right? You know, there's just, you can be entrepreneurial now, and it's easier because of the internet. New jobs are popping up that we had never thought of. Working internationally. So I'm optimistic. The reason why I do this work is because I'm optimistic for the future. There's always going to be challenges. There's always going to be headwinds. But if you look at history, there's been some huge headwinds, huge challenges that we've overcome. And I'd like to think we're better off. And so I don't know what it's going to look like. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of technology there. But hopefully it enables them to just kind of be happy and be in a good community where people get along and support each other.
Where can people learn more about Latino Prosperity?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, Latino Prosperity is a newer organization. We have a website. You can follow us on social media. But this year, we're going to be putting out some amazing reports. We're working with funding from the Eva Longoria Foundation to look at a Latina Wealth Initiative. We're looking at home lending trends to Latinos here in California. We have the OpenAI campaign that I talked about. And so I would say follow us, because this year is going to be a good year of us producing reports. And again, the goal is not just to produce a report, it's to create a good agenda that then you get policymakers to adopt so that they impact people's lives, just the way I was impacted by different policies and programs throughout my career.
Orson, what is the wealth gap between the average American household, say Anglo white household, and the average Latino household here in the United States?
So the average white household has about 5 times more wealth than the average Latino household. So it's a pretty stark wealth gap, right? And we, you know, I wouldn't expect the wealth to be on par, right? Like, for example, you know, my parents came from Guatemala 50 years ago. And so, you know, they're not going to be millionaires overnight, right? So the question is, I think it's good to compare it to the white household because it gives us a good benchmark, right? And maybe the white household should be higher, right? Like, because there is a lot of white poverty that we all should address and care about. But if that is a benchmark, question is, how do we get that, right? How can maybe in my lifetime, maybe not be a 5-to-1, maybe we get to, you know, 3, you know, get closer, you know, it's like, so how do we double our wealth? How do we 10 times our wealth? And so those are strategies we talk about, but I do think that's an important benchmark just because it gives you a goal to work for, you know, without that goal, you don't know what you're working towards.
Orson, how do you want to be remembered?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. How do I want to be remembered? You know, sometimes people ask you, what's your legacy? But, you know, I want my kids to remember that, you know, that they had a good dad, right? That they had a father that was there with them, you know, with their activities and hung out with them. So that's first and foremost is, you know, how does family remember you? But secondly, it's about impact, right? Yes, earlier, you know, what does Latino Prosperity want to do in 10 years? I want to make sure that some of the things we did are actually impacting youth, younger people in their professional careers, so that they're building wealth along their journey. They might not know who created that. That doesn't matter to me as long as that opportunity is there. And hopefully we had a say about that opportunity being available.
Orson Aguilar, like for those of you not aware, follow Orson Aguilar, social media, find Orson, go out there. Follow him. Follow Latino Prosperity. They're moving the needle. Orson is an influence leader in the regulatory space, in the social justice space, and economic development space. And Latino Prosperity literally has relationships across the United States and even global. Orson, we thank you for leading. We thank you for serving. We thank you for being a servant leader. And there's 3 top people I like to work with. And those of you who know this, right? Those are world changers, community builders, and rainmakers. Orson is a rainmaker because he's going out there and creating opportunities and creating growth, right? Those of you familiar with what rainmakers do in Native American culture, this is a rainmaker. Orson, thank you for leading. Thank you for serving. I look forward to you having you back here on the Undisputed Podcast. For those of you who have been inspired, who learned something new today, subscribe, share this with a friend. But more importantly, if you're interested to bring the Undisputed Podcast with Ty Bledsoe to your organization, to your community group, right? Nonprofit, for-profit, academic, et cetera, contact us. Click on the link below and contact my team at Undisputed LLC. Until next time, take care of yourselves and take care of each other.